Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by, and welcome to the GrainCorp Investor Briefing. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. After the speaker's presentation, there will be a question-and-answer session. To ask a question during the session, you will need to press star one on your telephone. Please be advised that today's conference is being recorded. I'll now hand the conference over to your first speaker today, Mr. Luke Thrum. Thank you. Please go ahead.
Thank you, and thanks everyone for joining us today. And thanks also for your patience. It's a little bit later than what we were envisaging. So you would have seen we've lodged the scheme booklet and the investor presentation a short time ago. So we'll be going through providing a summary on that and then taking some questions and answers afterwards. So I'm joined by Mark Palmquist, our CEO, and Alistair Bell, Group CFO. And we'll go through the presentation, and then we'll also put an audio recording up on our website afterwards. So I'll hand over to Mark now. Thanks, Mark.
Hey, thanks, Luke. Appreciate it. And also appreciate the fact that we've had the scheme booklet and the investor presentation in front of you for a total of 1 hour. So I'm not going to really refer to those. The investor presentation will give you kind of a nice summary of really what are the major points involved in the demerger and the two organizations, and we'll introduce you to United Malt as the new company that we're setting up as part of the demerger. And certainly the scheme booklet will give you a lot more detail. If I remember right, I think there's 385 really interesting pages to turn through, so I'm sure you'll enjoy that as well. But we have some weeks in front of us to be able to answer any of the detailed questions and comments that you have. So we're not going to get into too much of the detail today. But I do want to talk about, again, why we believe the demerger is benefit to shareholders. I do want to take some time, and I'm going to have Alistair Bell, our CFO, just walk through the capital structure and why we believe it's appropriate for the two organizations. And then give you some of our input on what it means to these two organizations on a go-forward basis and why we really do believe that is a benefit to the success of the companies and also certainly a benefit to the shareholders. I think our chairman, Graham Bradley, says it quite well that we have quoted in the release, and it's that the GrainCorp board believes that the demerger has the potential to unlock significant value for GrainCorp shareholders by creating two high-quality ASX-listed agribusiness companies, each with management teams focused on pursuing independent strategies and growth opportunities. And we really do believe that's an important component. One of the big benefits and one of the rationale that we have for doing the demerger is we really will have two separate boards and management teams that are empowered to pursue independent strategies and operational initiatives. This also allows the two organizations really to set their structure and the organization for best fit for the customers and the markets that they're participating in. And it also allows us to look at implementing the capital structures, which again, Alistair will refer to later, and financial policies that are really appropriate for the two businesses because we really do operate in different industries. And it certainly allows shareholders to be able to look at these two companies and really align with their different investment strategies and preferences that they have. And the demerger by no way removes any potential for us to reposition either GrainCorp, United Malt, or some of the portfolio businesses that we have into different type of organizations, be it into joint ventures, mergers, or outright sales. So we do believe that there is future value in the organization as we go forward. So just want to highlight the certainty of time frame that we have in front of us. The big component is the 16th of March, which is the date that is set for the demerger scheme meeting and general meeting. Giving the opportunity for shareholders to really have time to take a look at how we're organizing it, what we believe the benefits are, and for their approval at that meeting, of which then we'll hit the second court hearing on the 20th of March. From there, we have rather indicative dates put forward, but we believe that we'll be trading in the open marketplace on a normal settlement basis by early April. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Alistair. We'll talk about the capital structure because we certainly think that's important. We'll give you highlights on it. So as you're going through both the investor presentation and the scheme booklet, we can hopefully put some context into the decisions that we're making. Alistair?
Thank you, Mark, and good afternoon, everyone. It's good to be back here reporting back again about our portfolio review, and the most important part is how we've got the scheme booklet issued regarding the demerger of United Malt. It's strange to be calling our malt business United Malt, but it's a terrific name and a high quality business. So the scheme booklet sets out plenty of detail, including an independent expert report, pro formas, and new segment reporting. But I think one of the key updates for our investors has been about, and it's a key component of the demerger, is about setting the appropriate capital structure post the sale of our terminals business. That terminals business, as you'll recall, we announced at the end of November the competition clearance had come through, and we moved quickly to finalise to close that on the 31st of December. And the proceeds received were just over $310 million. So that was a key component of setting our pro forma core debt that we've used in the scheme booklet. The pro forma amount of core debt is $515 million and allows for transaction costs that GrainCorp will incur this fiscal year. So as we set the UMG policy, it was about maintaining a strong investment grade structure. We've previously stated that, and we put out there a leverage ratio that United Malt would stick within, which is the 2 to 2.5 times leverage. Now, this preserves balance sheet strength and flexibility. Also, it accommodates the seasonality of the business. So at times, this ratio is likely to be exceeded, and that's around the seasonality and the working capital requirements of United Malt. So it's higher at the 31 March and then lower at 30 September. The board of United Malt has got an initial dividend payout ratio of approximately 60% of NPAT, and this gives a pro forma net debt for United Malt of $433 million. For GrainCorp, the GrainCorp policy is about maintaining a conservative structure, targeting investment grade with minimal core debt. And the net debt will be there to accommodate seasonal fluctuations in working capital and commodity inventory. The board of GrainCorp is targeting a dividend payout of 50 to 70% of NPAT, and this gives rise to a pro forma core debt for GrainCorp of $82 million. That's all set out in the scheme booklet. But the other part is that GrainCorp's retaining a 10% minority interest in United Malt. This provides additional balance sheet resources and financing flexibility. There's no escrow or restrictions on this interest. And the intentions, as we outline in the scheme booklet, around this interest will depend on our capital requirements post demerger for GrainCorp, as well as the market value of the retained stake. At this point, I'll hand back to Mark, who'll introduce United Malt.
Thanks, Alistair. Appreciate that. Also, just some comments about GrainCorp when we are through the demerger. And then I'll come into United Malt. But the structure that we have set up leaves GrainCorp in a very good position. It's an organization that has a very strong position in East Coast Australia, has a growing international business, has the largest oilseed processing integrated business in ANZ, all built on a very strong capital foundation that allows GrainCorp to be able to pursue its opportunities and its strategies as it goes forward. Based on over 100 years of being in business with a very experienced management team and the addition of a CEO that has a very strong background in terms of foods and agribusiness and is a very customer-centric attitude, which will be very additive to the team. For United Malt, it means a lot of things that can be new, but it also means that there's a lot of things that are still there. United Malt is a very strong business, been highly successful in the past with a very experienced team, having it being organized into two segments is how we will report it. We'll have the processing segment, which is being led by Darren Smith as president of that group, who presently is the chief operating officer in our business unit of Malt. We have Brian Beshard, who will head up the warehouse processing group or the warehouse distribution group. Brian actually started that business back in 1995 before we acquired that business, and he's been in charge of that business and growing it and now expanding it into the international craft business, where we see great growth going on in Asia as well as Latin America. And then we have Amy Spanik, who will be the CFO, who has been with the organization before GrainCorp actually bought the malt business, and has been the CFO of that group since 2015. So well-experienced, and we go down through the ranks, and we have decades of experience that can run this business. This also is a business that's well-positioned in the markets, has a strong, diverse customer base, and as Alistair pointed out, it's strong financially and very well set up for it to pursue any of the opportunities going forward. I think one of the biggest fundamental differences for United Malt is that we'll have the ability to think about strategy on a deeper and wider level than where we have been in the past. And we'll be able to look at opportunities both organically as well as externally, and as we look at growing the business and expanding ourselves geographically as well as on a product base. What we end up with is a company that is more focused on its business, a pure play. And I can say the same thing for GrainCorp as well. So we're very excited about having this opportunity and being able to take it forward. Just on a functional note, I would also say that the corporate headquarters for United Malt will be in Vancouver, Washington, as over 60% of our business is in North America. And also it is, I would say, better centrally located from a time zone base. So it would just be easier for us to conduct the business. However, we will have a listed office in Sydney, and very importantly, our investor relations will be based in Sydney, as we're very proud of the shareholder base that we have, that is vast majority is Australian entities and individuals, and we intend to make sure that we maintain that support, and we deserve that support. So we're very excited about the changes that we have going forward. I think at this point, we've opened up to questions, but again, I would look at the questions being really more kind of high-level things that we can do to kind of help you as you're going through the scheme booklet. And as I'm looking across at Alistair, Alistair, I think you probably just have a few more comments that you'd like to make before we get to the questions.
Thank you, Mark. Might just touch on GrainCorp after the demerger. The demerger is another key milestone in GrainCorp's long and proud history. And so post-demerger, GrainCorp will continue to be a leading Australian agribusiness. We all know it's got diversified operations, connecting the grower to consumers. It's a significant supply chain and manufacturing platform and well-positioned asset base with international reach along the value chain. I mention these and recap it because the demerger repositions GrainCorp to focusing on leveraging this platform and to expand its presence along the value chain, such as our feeds business. I touched on earlier about the importance of our capital structure and to be able to accommodate the business through the cycle and seasonal fluctuations. But there are three elements that I just like to remind people about. The first is we executed a 10-year crop production contract as a way to smooth cash flows against the East Coast Australia crop production. This is a really important piece in our capital structure. Touched on maintaining a minimal core debt Now, this is because United Malt is capable of absorbing and servicing the majority of the core debt. And then we've retained a 10% minority interest, and this provides additional balance sheet resources and financing flexibility for GrainCorp's future. I think the other thing is, what else is changing and not changing? GrainCorp continues and has been for some time underway with a number of significant operational initiatives to strengthen our core business. We're well down the track on that, and we'll continue to pursue it. And we've outlined these plus our strategy in detail in the scheme booklet. As Mark mentioned, you know, management are the same, other than we're welcoming in Robert Spurway as the Managing Director and CEO, once Mark departs after the demerger is effective. And for GrainCorp's board, we've got a well-experienced board of directors, knowledgeable about the industry, including the new directors that have come with good industry knowledge. And the way we organise ourselves now as part of the new operating model is that we combine grains and oils, but the new segment reporting will be in two lines, agribusiness and processing. And once again, we've reset the historical performance in the scheme booklet. So Mark, I thought it was just while touching that. So what's different with GrainCorp, and I'll hand back to you then.
Yeah, those are great points, Alistair. I'm glad you brought those up. Miles, I think we're ready for some questions.
Certainly. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. We will now begin the question and answer session. If you wish to ask a question, just please press *1 on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. If at any time you need to cancel your request, just please press the pound or the hash key. So just once again, that's *1 on your telephone. But your first question comes from James Ferrier from Wilsons. Please ask your question, James.
Hi, guys. Thanks for your time this afternoon. First question, going back to the settlement of the divestment of the liquid terminals. Alistair, what sort of tax is payable on that gross proceed figure of $333
million? So we've set out the detail in the scheme booklet. We've got carried forward tax losses, so there's minimal tax payable that arises. There was assessable profits, tax profits. However, we've been able to offset them against some of our carried forward losses.
Yeah, okay, that makes sense. Second question is around CapEx. I'll try and keep this relatively high level, as you've referred to. Just thinking about stay in business CapEx for the two businesses going forward. Thinking back to the FY19 result for the combined group, you talked about FY20 stay in business CapEx being similar to FY19, so about $42 million. And just skimming through the presentation just now, it seems you're referencing about $25 million for Malt, for United Malt, and about $40 million for GrainCorp, so 65 in total. I'm just wondering if there's anything in particular that's driving what seems to be an increase in stay-in-business CapEx.
James, just to recap, the amounts that we have included in the scheme booklet and also the investor presentation, they're consistent to how we've updated the market at the full year results, but we've just split it out, obviously, within the two groups. United Malt is slightly higher than, say, 12 months ago, but is consistent, and that's because in the near term, we felt it was important United Malt complete a number of projects to assist them with their operational efficiencies. And in terms of GrainCorp, its business, we've outlined on page 58, 35 to 45 million. That's a through the cycle number. Obviously, we've been through a period of three droughts in a row, so the spend or the demand on the business has been less. But we've indicated that if we're back to normal levels of production East Coast, that's the sort of money that we'd be spending in our, in that sort of average year.
Yeah, okay, that's helpful, Alistair. Thank you. Last question. I saw some figures out of Nielsen suggesting that craft beer sales in the US declined in 2019. I'm wondering if that's consistent with what you're seeing. And I ask it just because with the additional detail we've got around the outlook for United Malt in this presentation today, there's a bit of reference there to the opportunities to grow the distribution, grow market share and points of presence on the ground. So maybe you could comment on those two aspects, please.
Yeah, there's no question that craft is slowing down in its percentage growth, but we haven't seen that, haven't experienced that, and Brewers Association is showing growth that's closer to 3-4% for the past year. So I'm not sure where Nielsen's is getting their numbers from, and that hasn't been our experience as well. More importantly is that you're having this sector of the microbrew is where the big growth is, which fits in very well with our warehouse distribution network. And that is still growing by leaps and bounds. And so overall beer consumption is pretty flat in the U.S., and what you're seeing is a decline in market share of we would call the kind of the mainstay big brewers. So you're dealing with kind of a standard lager, pilsner type of beer. And the growth in craft is really skewed towards the microbrewery side, where you are seeing flat and you are seeing some decline by some of the big national craft brewers. But the smaller side is where the growth is really going, and that's the part, and that's the component of the craft business that really fits well with our warehouse and distribution.
Great. Thanks. Thanks very much, Mark. That's much appreciated.
Thanks, James.
Your next question comes from the line of David Pobucky from Macquarie. Please ask your question, David.
Hi, guys. Thanks for doing the call this afternoon. Look, I'm just going to continue on the last question if I may, just in terms of the split between craft and majors. So, you know, the majors still have about a 53% share, versus craft of 33% in terms of your split. How do you see that changing over the next few years, particularly with you know, demand in that major space, you know, not growing?
Yeah, it appears that the consumers are still switching and drinking more on craft than they are on what I would call the mainstay or regular type of brewers. So if we were looking at that and saying what we've experienced over the past 4 or 5 years, that we would look for further degradation in their market share. But again, from a pure volume base, it's still very huge. So you got to be kind of watchful of seeing that decline. It still is a tremendously big volume, and it still is a big component of our business. But where the growth is really coming for us, both from a volume base as well as a margin base, is really coming in on the craft brewers. And it's really because their requirement has two components to it. Generally speaking, they have a higher inclusion rate of malt on a per barrel base, so we see the malt volumes growing. And the second component is that they require what we would call more specialty malts. So they're either variety specific or they're crystal malts or roasted type of malts, which again fits in very well with our organization. That's our specialty, and that's our leading position.
Great, thanks. And just one last question, just in terms of retaining a minority ownership in United Malt of 10%, if you're just able to provide a bit more color around that, potentially relative to, you know, the other options of not retaining, you know, minority ownership there, and just what's meant by, you know, additional balance sheet resourcing and financing flexibility. Thanks.
Yeah, thanks, David. part of my intro, I referenced that the pro forma core debt for GrainCorp was $82 million, and GrainCorp was about ensuring we have minimal core debt moving forward, so our balance sheet capacity is around funding working capital and seasonal inventory demands. So as we thought about that and our future requirements, the boards decided to retain 10% of United Malt to allow additional balance sheet resourcing just to have coverage around that future need, and it just gives additional capacity to and financing flexibility as we plan the year ahead.
Great, thanks guys, that's it for me.
Your next question comes from Adam Fleck from Morningstar. Please ask your question, Adam.
Hi, good afternoon, thanks so much for your time. I had a follow-up question, I think it's slide 28 in the investor presentation. I appreciate that the EBITDA margins for both the processing and the warehouse distribution businesses have come off. I imagine that's because of some of the cost pass-throughs that you mentioned on the barley side. So I was hoping maybe if you could help us with just the direction of an ton or some per volume figure.
Well, yeah, you're right. We did have some circumstances that happened. The one is we're dealing with the drought issue down here in Australia, and so there has been some additional costs that have gone in terms of being able to satisfy our customers. Case in point, we ended up moving quite a bit of barley over from Western Australia to satisfy our needs. We've also had, I know this is going to sound strange me saying this, but we had some winter events in Canada, which you have every year. But in this particular case, the timing and the events were somewhat extraordinary for us, and not just for us, but also for our customers. So we actually had one issues a little bit with quality, some what we call a chitted barley, which means that it pre-sprouts. And so we had some quality issues and had to move some additional tonnage in from Manitoba and eastern Saskatchewan to our plant in Calgary. And then we also had a delay in some shipments going on, which was just kind of a downsizing of some of the volume that happened as well. Not experiencing those issues as we're coming forward in this year. And we always do experience weather events in Canada, so I don't want to make it sound like we're not prepared for the winter. On the warehouse distribution side, that's really the ramp-up of our national distribution system that we've been going through. So as you know, we've got now 9 facilities in the U.S. We have 3 in Canada. We cover all the areas well. I was going to try to reference a page for you in the presentation so you can just see how we're situated in that marketplace. But we're pretty well ramped up now. And so the last one, I'm sorry, page 19. We're pretty well situated now to hit the areas that not just existing customer, but where we're seeing the further growth going on with the microbrews and the craft side of the business. And so we certainly are anticipating that we'll be getting our returns on that ramp up. Those facilities, by the way, were pretty well done doing any 3PL type of facilities. These are being owned and or operated by us, which certainly gives us better intimacy with our customers and certainly give them better service out of it.
Great, thank you. That's really helpful. And then moving back to slide 20, you had called out, we've been, of course, talking about craft versus macro brew, but you called out the distribution partners and the opportunity in Mexico and LATAM there. And I was just curious, we have seen Mexican beer really rise in demand as well as craft in the U.S., and I was curious if you could discuss how that impacts your malt business in North America.
Yeah, it's an interesting question because it does appear kind of strange in the front end that we're importing a lot of Mexican beer, and then we turn around and we're importing products for the craft side into Mexico. So the Mexican beer coming up, primarily when you see brands such as Corona, Pacifico, Modelo, Dos Equis,
they are being brewed in Mexico, but a lot of the product is actually coming out of the U.S., so we ship a lot of malt into that, so that's a good category for us in terms of growth. What we're seeing on the craft side is similar to what we are having happen in U.S., Canada, and also Australia, is it's the microbrew side. So we're seeing a lot of small breweries springing up, and it's really growing at a very fast pace, albeit from a small kind of base starting point. So what we're shipping down into that area is a lot of the specialty malts, hops, and other products, adjuncts that go into it so that they can produce that craft quality. So they're producing things from IPAs to ports to actually unique lagers, different types of qualities going into it. And so that's the big growth that's happening, not just in Mexico, but what we're seeing in other areas like Brazil and also over in Asia. Big growth going on. It's Southeast Asia is really, really getting to be a big place that's growing. We talk about a lot of the owners that are in there. A lot of them end up being nationals that have come to the U.S. and gone to university, and they go back there, and they can't get their craft there anymore. So they start up a little microbrews and go into the market over there.
Great. Thanks very much. I'll leave it there.
Very welcome.
Just another reminder, ladies and gentlemen, it is star one to ask for a question today. But your next question comes from Apoorv Sehgal from UBS. Please ask your question.
Oh, good afternoon, guys. Just one question from me, please. How are you assessing the impact of the recent bushfires on GrainCorp in terms of supply chain assets and grain receivables?
Well, I can be very happy to share with you that from a facility aspect, we've been able to get through it relatively unscathed. We've had a little bit of concern of some smoke-tainted product that we've had a little bit careful with, and it's ones that are used straight into processing. So there's some malt barley, as an example, that's gotten smoke-tainted. But the impact on our customers has been traumatic in a lot of areas, and again, our employees live in those areas as well, so we've had employees impacted by it as well, having lost assets and buildings that have gone on. So in that respect, it's been pretty devastating. I can also tell you is we're really pleased that we're starting to see rain events coming forward, and rain patterns are changing, so that has certainly been very, very helpful. We'll also go through this with a little bit more detail at our annual general meeting on the 19th of February. I will say that we've seen a tremendously great outpouring of support coming out of our people that are out there, volunteering a lot of their time. We've been allowing use of our equipment, particularly generators, have been a big draw for us. And we're also participating in something through our Burston malt sub here in Australia, the Resonance Beer, which has really came and was spawned a couple years ago with the fires in California that was started up by Sierra Nevada and supported by Country Malt and Great Western Malt. And we're doing the same thing down here in Australia, and we're really receiving nice support and donations from a lot of different brewers and malt companies as well.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from Jonathan Snape from Bell Potter. Please ask your question, Jonathan.
Yeah, thanks. Look, maybe a couple for Alistair, if I can, on the optics of the residual assets in GrainCorp, and particularly I'm looking at page 145 of the scheme document where you've given a full pro forma P&L, and it looks like in all but the record crop year, the business kind of booked an underlying loss at the NPAT level. And look, that's even when you had, I think, two crops that were above the $15.3 million that you reference as long-term average. So look, I think that leads on to two things, which is, you know, one, how confident are you that, you know, with a 15 or 17 million ton crop, that the business is actually going to print a net profit after tax and therefore pay a dividend, which I would have called normalised. And two, you know, is the carrying value of the assets appropriate? Because it would look like the depreciation probably has to get a lot closer to stay in business CapEx number.
So, Jono, we're not planning to go into the detail of the scheme booklet on this call, given the documents were only released an hour beforehand. So a couple of reflections on your two questions. The second one was about carrying value. The directors are mindful of the carrying value and applying the impairment test that applies. And if that was to occur, we would have called that out either the full year just gone by or as part of the scheme booklet. Obviously, as part of the half-year and year-end audits, we'll engage with our external auditor to make sure that the appropriate tests are done. And in terms of the earnings profile, in a normalised year, the directors and management remain very confident that we'll be reporting profits. There are always circumstances in each year and each crop, and even in the big year that of 2017 that I think you're referencing, there are circumstances that we reported that had unfavourable impact on the business, including the rail provider not performing. There was a large, the last quarter, very small amount of grain moved because of the very dry winter and spring that happened. And all of those add to the character of any particular year. And so we've tried to explain those in the notes of the scheme booklet, where we've given insights into the performance of each of those years, and I encourage the audience here to reference those footnotes for each of the years.
Okay, and look, just where we're at in the year, you have a pretty good handle of what you're going to get in terms of crop receipts from the winter crop, but obviously the summer crop probably throws in a bit of a variance in there, but probably not a great deal. Is there any reason why there's no 2020 numbers or guidance in? Because it's usually about February you guys have historically given a forward look on where you think receipts, export activity and so forth, and where the numbers are going to kind of fall.
But there's a couple of things to unpack the question. Normally in a demerger scheme booklet, you don't include forward-looking commentary or year. And for GrainCorp providing earnings guidance, you're right, we do it after the harvest, and so we're just through the winter harvest, and we're now only experiencing rains that could have an influence on the summer crops, the plantings. Obviously, it's encouraging for planting, but whether certain areas are still able to get the acreage under crop, well, it's too early to tell. We typically cover the earnings performance off at the AGM, and once again, we'll be providing any update. If there was anything material to report, the directors are aware of their continuous disclosure. So in the normal course, we'll provide an update on the outlook for 2020. That may or may not include earnings guidance. The board will consider that based on the information they have now worked through the winter crop. I'll also add one other thing. The crop production contract, the first test of that occurs this month when ABARES issue their report on Tuesday the 18th of February, and that'll be the first time that we'll see how that calculates through. And once again, if it's different to the market's expectation, we'll provide further commentary at the AGM or around the AGM time.
All right, thank you.
Your next question comes from Xavier Waterstone from Key Street Asset Management. Please ask your question, Xavier.
Afternoon, guys. Just a couple of quick accounting ones for you, Alistair. First one, on the funding costs, whether you, I guess, given the deconsolidation, you lose that kind of internal diversification and the additional 17 mil of costs, whether you've seen any changes on the margin for the facilities?
Both remain good credits and are consistent with what we've enjoyed in the past.
Yep, and second quick one was just looking at page 56 on the Prezo. It looks like that depreciation capex chart's the other way around from, I guess, the way we usually looked at it, and it's in the sense that it looks like the stay in business capex runs at about half of depreciation, so the implication there is, is there a risk that you're kind of underinvesting or sweating your assets, and in the fullness of time, do you expect that to equalize with depreciation again as well?
It's a great question, and it's in many ways, it's too early to tell exactly where we end up in a number of years from now. But if just to remind everyone, we've been through a period of large capital expenditure across our processing business, as well as the East Coast of Australia country network, and as we've expanded into Canada as well. So the spend levels of the past are now going through to the depreciation. We're also running fewer sites, country sites, so the demand around the stay in business will over time diminish, but it's too early to tell whether the D&A will come back towards your stay in business level.
All right, thanks for that.
Okay.
Your last question comes from Belinda Moore from Morgans. Please ask your question, Belinda.
Mark and Alistair, a few questions, please, maybe if we go one at a time. Mark, any update on the marketing book and how that's performing just in light of last year's issues? Please.
Yeah. Belinda, I think I'm going to leave that one alone with the AGM coming up. We'll probably give some look in terms of how things are going. The one thing that I will tell you is that obviously we have had an extremely small crop. We have been importing a lot of grain, but the fundamental change this year versus last year is a lot of that is coming from Victoria, which had a very good, outstanding crop and has allowed us to be able to shorten our supply chains, which certainly has a positive impact on working capital. Also has a positive impact in that a lot of the grain that we're pulling out of Victoria is actually one of our own sites. So that requires us to have less what I call in-transit inventory like we had to have last year. So we're certainly in a much better position where we're at, and we haven't experienced any new trade disruptions so that we haven't had to worry about that component so that the prices have been relatively stable through the whole process. So certainly better dynamics this year than last year.
Okay, certainly. And look, this demerger's, there's a lot of costs initially, putting aside the one-off costs, but I think you've talked about $17 million of additional sort of underlying costs, and particularly for malt now, it's got about $15 million of costs. Can the malt costs of sort of 15 be reduced over time, or do they actually sort of grow in line with, the business?
Yeah, so there's two components. Obviously, being a public company, we have some what I'll call more of a permanent cost. So United Malt will have a board, and it will have statutory requirements, and there is a number of functions that GrainCorp was performing for Malt as a business unit that Malt will have to do for itself. And so to pass off those responsibilities on to United Malt, we've had to ramp up our capabilities to make sure that we meet all of those requirements we have in front of us. Over the next 18 months, we'll look at ways that we can actually integrate that into our present structure of the Malt business so that we're able to start to take down some of those costs. But the reality is we will have an underlying
base cost that is different than where it was before, which creates the opportunity now for GrainCorp to be able to resize a lot of what they had in place for what I'll call functional support. And that's a process that Alistair had alluded to before, that that's on its way, but as we do the handover, there'll be a little bit of being able to get it fully resized the way that they want it. But we anticipate that we'll be able to get that $14.9 million, get it down significantly, but it's going to take us somewhere in that 18-month period of time.
Okay, now that's helpful. And then just one comment. I know I think you make on the first page or something of the presentation, you allude to sort of, you know, that there could potentially be corporate appeal post demerger. Can you say, have you had, you know, further interest in each of the businesses in recent months?
Well, we've always had interest in the businesses, so I wouldn't say that that's any out of ordinary activity, and that's been going on for a number of years. And interest isn't just about being purchased. Just interest in both entities now are what I call a more focused pure play, that you start to get interest from other organizations in ways that we can work closer together in a relationship. It can be about ownership. And those will, I'm sure, continue to form, particularly after we're demerged. Because we both organizations, GrainCorp and United Malt, end up being structurally different on a go-forward basis. So that can create new opportunities for us.
Okay. Thanks very much for your time.
There are no further questions at this time. I'll hand back the conference for any closing remarks. Thank you.
Thanks for that, Miles. And thanks, everyone, for joining us and for your patience today. So we look forward to talking to you over the next few weeks, and please feel free to reach out if you've got questions during that time. So thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, that does conclude today's conference. Thank you for all participating. You may now all disconnect.